This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Rabble Radio, episode 163, March 2015. I'm Victoria Fenner from Toronto Studio West.
And I'm Megan Perry in Toronto Studio East. Well, there was a time when we thought we'd have to be ready for a spring federal election. That hasn't happened yet, which gives us even more time to get information out about the various nefarious ways the Harper government has changed our country.
And it gives us time to come up with more reasons why the Harper government needs to go.
Today's program is an early spring warm-up for the fall election. We've got lots of reasons to get rid of the Harper government. You might already know what they are, but there are always some new perspectives to share.
Especially after the March protests of Bill C-51, the so-called secret police bill. Good to see the resistance is strong. We'll do a recap of some of the sounds from the weekend, an interview by Red Eye in Vancouver about what's already being done to spy on us. And first, our parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg talks about what he's seen in his years as Rabble.ca's parliamentary reporter.
In May of 2011, the Harper Conservatives won a majority government. That same year, Rabble.ca hired Carl Nirenberg as its parliamentary reporter. Since then, Carl's been chronicling the radical agenda concealed in Harper's so-called strong, stable, conservative majority. On February 18th, a panel discussion titled The Harper Record on Trial marked the release of Carl Nirenberg's new book, Harper vs. Canada, Five Ways of Looking at the Conservative Regime. Here's an excerpt from Carl, recorded at that discussion.
Now, I have to say, feeling extremely discouraged and disconsolate these days since the introduction of what we call Bill C-51, the anti-terrorism bill. Not because it's another terrible bill or another bill, flawed bill, being rammed through Parliament without any proper process, as we say in French, préalable, in advance, and without a fair and democratic hearing in Parliament. That's bad enough. But what really bothers me is the extent to which, even in my experience, it is resonating. I don't believe some Angus Reid poll based on an online pre-selected sample and asking God knows what question and then finding that the people say, well, yes, I think I heard that there was such a bill and I think I might be in favor of it. I don't really think that's useful. But I do believe what I hear from people when I talk to people. And when I talk to people, that's the resonance I'm getting. The resonance I'm getting is, I am scared. I am scared. There is badness out there. There are people who chop people's heads off out there. And they have said for the first... There have always been people who chop people's heads off or do worse. There has always been people... there has always been strife and Sturm und Drang and some terrible things going on in the world. But now they're mentioning us. They're saying Canada. They've discovered us. You know, we're on their list. Somebody, no, and you know, the fact that Al-Shabaab in Somalia is a completely different organization from either Al-Qaeda or from the Islamic State folks in Syria and Iraq is really of little interest. Even the people, I mean, I was talking to a PhD the other night, a brilliant, progressive, intelligent professor at McGill. He wasn't sure what was the other, but all he knew was, don't want to know about it. Don't want that to happen. Please stop that from happening. I don't want people threatening the West Edmonton Mall, even if I wouldn't be caught dead in the West Edmonton Mall. You know, I don't want to know about that. You know, and Al-Shabaab, people who know, said, well, that is a rather different sort of organization. It's based in Somalia. It's more of a nationalist organization. It has social roots. There's explanations for all this sort of stuff. But Canadians are very, very frightened. Very shaken, very sense this horrible insecurity. Of course, you know, I mean, if you listen to Cross Country Checkup, as I did a bit on the weekend, all those people, CBC listeners calling in are saying, well, you know, global warming is a greater threat to the security of mankind than terrorism. That's fine. Unfortunately, I don't think they represent the majority view right now in Canada. I think I think those of us who say, indeed, we're much more likely to drown in the bathtub. I think somebody actually, I saw in Atlantic Monthly, somebody actually did an analysis, and they did the percentage chances of drowning in the bathtub versus being killed by terrorists. Much, much higher drowning in the bathtub. And, you know, that's why I never take a bath. In fact, I'm always a shower man, you know. But the people, nonetheless, there was something about this. And, you know, and anytime you think maybe things are calming down, maybe we're ready to have a sane and rational debate, maybe we're ready to look at the evidence and look at what's being presented, then there's a tunnel. I mean, what kind of, I mean, you know, when I'm feeling good about some media reporting, I mean, I have to say, one has to feel good when one finds oneself agreeing with the Globe and Mail both on the Fair Elections Act and on C-51. And yet the lurid reporting, there's a tunnel, let's get a terrorism expert. Hold on a second. You know, so now how's the terrorism expert going to explain that they found a rosary in the place and a poppy? These guys wear poppies? They're into the poppy? Do you see, like, the Al-Shabaab contingency at Remembrance Day? I mean, so, I mean, you know, they have a generator. The whole thing's expensive. You know, who knows what this is? Maybe it's a club. I don't know, but... The news, you know, whatever is happening in the world, this is the lead. Tunnel in Toronto. It's near a site for Pan Am Games. Pretty scary, huh? There's going to be lots of people there. Well, it's going to be near something anyway. They're going to find the tunnel. It'll be near a school. It'll be near a subway station. It'll be near a place where people live. And so that contributes to it. You know, a Facebook posting somewhere from some shadowy group. They mentioned the West Edmonton Mall. Now, I mean, my own feeling is, like, empty the place and then, you know, like, put a good bomb to it. But, I mean, that's probably going to be illegal very soon, actually. Saying that's going to be illegal. I know the Edmonton Oilers used to practice there, but look where it got them, you know. I mean, you know. So, in any case, having said all that, I was going to talk about... I mean, so that's really... The modus operandi, I mean, a responsible government would say, you know, the world, they might say, yes, the world, the threats in the world have evolved and changed. We have made a military commitment. I mean, even if one could accept that a responsible government may differ from people like me and say it is worthwhile to make some kind of token contribution to a military commitment to try to help the Americans put back together what they broke in the first place and never tried to repair. But, and after all, poor Mr. Obama, he inherited that too. But, I mean, he's the president of the United States, so even if it was his predecessor who caused the problem, he's sort of got to work on it. Even if you say that that might be acceptable, then your next step is, okay, well, we're now facing perhaps a greater jeopardy or peril here. What we have to do is move in a rational, evidence-based, responsible way and see what is necessary to do. You know, we have to call... have hearings or we bring forward the various experts and the professionals in security and all that sort of thing, look at what tools we actually have now, find out somewhere, if anywhere, where there are the défaillances, as we say in French, where there are gaps, where we do have to legislate if necessary, and then move reasonably with full respect for human rights, not conflating civil disobedience and dissent with terrorism. But this is not a responsible government. This is not a government that chooses to act responsibly. And, you know, I was going back to what I had been writing since 2011. The very first article was about what they called then Bill C-4, which was so-called anti-smuggling legislation. It ultimately got wrapped up into another piece of legislation called Bill C-31, which dealt with a reform of the whole refugee intake system. And then the government was playing on fear and resentment. We'd had a couple of boatloads of quite legitimate, in fact, for the most part, Tamil refugees from Sri Lanka who'd arrived in Canada. Indeed, perhaps it was through the mechanism, through the wiles of exploitive, what we call people smugglers, and people who were the people who brought them here weren't the nicest people, but they got here somehow, and we were demonizing the whole lot of them and creating legislation which would say, if you're a refugee who arrives by boat, you're still a refugee, we're not going to put you in jail for a year. And then when you look at, I mean, reporting on what Stephen Woodworth, who loves to stand up, and he's one of the big hitters for the government in all debates. He stood up and he kept talking about Q-jumpers, and right away, bogus refugees, Q-jumpers, and people who are seeking to abuse of our goodwill and our patience. Interesting, because this is the Sri Lanka and the country that produces refugees. Our own prime minister subsequently wouldn't even go to that country, and he wouldn't set foot in the country because they're supposed to be human rights abusers. So he seeks the grandstand opportunity where he can say, all for human rights, I won't go to Sri Lanka, but I don't want to take their refugees in either. But I think I wrote it at the time, this is a government that governs on the basis of fear and fear alone, to paraphrase Franklin Roosevelt. And that was the first day. That was the beginning of this parliament, and that was the theme in the parliament, to create an impression, to create a scapegoat, invent a bumper sticker, a slogan. Just today, Pierre Poilievre got up, asked a question about the Fair Elections Act and about the court case and about the possibility of an injunction. And what does he do? He doesn't answer the issues. He doesn't deal with the issues. He says, well, we had a debate on that, and 87% of Canadians think that people should produce identity if they want to vote. And he doesn't talk about the actual onerous identity. Even many people who object to the Fair Elections Act say, well, we're not talking about any identity provision. We're talking about the particular onerous, unfair, impossible identity provisions in the actual Fair Elections Act. I mean, you're called upon to bring your lease or something, or your phone bill, together with your health card. I mean, we're putting huge barriers, and the elimination of vouching for people who have no other option. But they don't address issues. They don't even talk about issues. And that is the nature of the government we've had. But I suppose the sad reality, and I think I'm getting a look here that I should stop talking. I think I will. Even if I'm not getting a look, I think I will stop talking. We can talk. I had all kinds of other things I wanted to say, but you can go read the book or look up the articles on Rabbles. But the sad reality is that it's somehow we've come, you know, after 4 years of this and after longer since 2006, to a point where an appeal to fear does seem to be working. So I don't want to leave it on a negative or depressing note, but it works so well that even the guy leading in the opinion polls and the person who so many people say to me, well, I'm not so sure about it, but, you know, I have to vote for him because it's the only way to unseat the Conservatives, because after all, opinion polls tell me that. But even he says, well, I'm allowed to criticize this government, but I must slavishly sniff their farts and vote with them. You know, I mean, I don't have a right not to, because after all, people are too afraid. And I am, hey, I'm in the political prostitution business. I want to get a trick, you know, a trick called something called a government, getting myself elected. So I say, you know, legalize real prostitution for real prostitutes and, you know, give them some real protection, legal opportunity. But in politics, I'm not so sure we need more prostitutes.
That was Rabble.ca's parliamentary reporter, Carl Nirenberg, talking at a panel discussion on February 18th in Ottawa. It was called The Harper Record on Trial, and it was sponsored by Rabble.ca. Carl has just published a new book, Harper vs. Canada, 5 Ways of Looking at the Conservative Regime. It's available for $14.95 from Rabble.ca. Go to Rabble.ca for information about how to order.
Last weekend, over 50 different communities across Canada protested Bill C-51, the bill which dramatically undermines our rights, allows scary amounts of civilian oversight, and threatens our right to dissent and peaceful protest. According to the website stopc51.ca, no less than 17 government agencies and even some foreign governments will have access to sensitive information about you if the bill passes. Even without Bill C-51, we're seeing a frightening erosion of our rights already. According to Rabble podcast Red Eye, recent revelations show that Canada's electronic spy agency records and analyzes up to 15 million downloads per day. The Communications Security Establishment is Canada's electronic spy agency. It also tracks visits to government websites and collects emails which are written to our members of parliament. David Christopher is a spokesperson for Open Media. He speaks with Red Eye host James Mainguy.
It's starting to become clear, especially from a number of the recent leaks. It looks like the Five Eyes spy agencies are effectively tapping the backbone of the internet. people, there's really two ways they could be collecting this vast amount of information. One is with the actual cooperation of some of the telecom companies, whether here in Canada or overseas. Secondly, is simply to tap the internet cables. So it seems almost all but certain, for example, that the GCHQ, which is Britain's version of the CSC, is clearly tapping the transatlantic cables that carry, you know, internet traffic between North America and Europe, and vast quantities of traffic travel over those cables every day, and it looks very much like that all that is simply being captured and grabbed and stored in databases and then shared among these the Five Eyes agencies. So it certainly, in a number of these recent cases, it seems that, like, you know, they would not have had the ability to get this kind of information if they're not, like, tapping the backbone of the internet. So it does make it all the more worrying, because the sheer scale of this is almost unfathomable. It's pretty much every piece of data going over the internet is subject to this kind of surveillance and interference.
And didn't I hear a story a week or so ago about GCHQ tapping into a company that made SIM cards for hundreds of millions of phones worldwide? So now GCHQ can hack into just about anybody's cell phone.
Yes, the GCHQ and the NSA, perhaps even with the assistance of the CSC, they hacked into this Dutch company. And it turns out this company makes the SIM cards for pretty much, you know, vast numbers of cell phones. So, for example, every major cell phone company in the U.S., and I think most of the major cell phone companies here in Canada, use these SIM cards. And what a lot of people don't realize is the SIM card actually does encrypt the traffic that goes between your mobile device and the nearest wireless tower. So the fact that the Five Eyes, these spy agencies, have cracked the encryption on that does give them the ability to tap in directly into your internet traffic whenever you're using, you know, if you're sitting on the SkyTrain and you're using the internet on there, and, you know, that's potentially tappable into that. So there, it really is a systematic onslaught on people's digital privacy. You know, these agencies want there to be no privacy whatsoever on the internet, and for nobody to ever be able to make a private communication or to, you know, simply surf the web or communicate with anybody in private. They want it all. They really are trying to collect it all. This is their philosophy, and I think it's deeply disturbing. They've kept it secret for years. It's really Edward Snowden has brought all of this to light, and I think it's high time we had, well, firstly, that we had the government here come clean about what the CSC is up to, and secondly, I think we need a full national debate about this and about what the impact for our democracy is going to be if we carry on in this direction.
You're mentioning that the security establishment seems to think there should be no such thing as a private phone call. Where is the line between legal and illegal surveillance, or is there a line at all?
The government repeatedly assures us that CSC does not target Canadians in its spying activities. You know, Peter MacKay even said that explicitly in the House of Commons in June of 2013, told Parliament that the CSC does not spy on Canadians. And these two recent revelations have really completely revealed that that's an untruth. He wasn't telling the truth, despite the fact he was the minister responsible for the CSC at the time. They're clearly spying on the internet downloads of Canadians who simply click a link on the internet on one of, you know, any one of 100 or more popular file hosting websites. In fact, there were actually Canadian internet addresses were among the targets in the documents that were revealed via Edward Snowden. So, I mean, we know for a fact that they were spying on Canadians.
You outlined what sounds like just a truly staggering amount of information that's collected about everything we do on the internet or on our cell phones. Is there any sense of how much of that information is actually used by the security establishment?
That's a very good question. It really goes to their whole philosophy here, which is, you know, you had the former head of the NSA basically lay it out pretty explicitly. It's a collect the haystack and search for needles later approach. So what they do is their philosophy is to gather in all this internet traffic, store it in their giant databases for years and years and years, and then at any future point in time, if they want to go and find out what you or I or any one of your listeners was up to on March the 1st of 2015, they will be able to sort of zoom in on that piece of internet activity in their databases and again, you know, connect that up with all these other parts of internet activities that we might have been involved in, and use that information to paint a really detailed picture of someone's life. So this is really the problem here. The core problem is that this is mass untargeted surveillance. It's conducted against everybody. There's no real differentiation between people who are actually potentially, you know, engaged in wrongdoing or planning an attack or something like that, that you'd think those would be the ones they should be zooming in on. Instead, they're simply collecting all this personal information about absolutely everybody in the theory that they might it might come in useful one day. But as I say, this completely overturns the sort of privacy is so important for democracy because, if the government knows everything that each and every one of its citizens are doing, that fundamentally alters the power dynamic between a citizen and the state. It gives the state far too much power and control over the lives of everyday citizens.
That was David Christopher of Open Media talking to James Mangai of Vancouver Co-op Radio's podcast, Red Eye. You can listen to more excellent interviews by the Red Eye Collective on the Rabble Podcast Network by going to our podcast page. Up next.
Every good protester knows that the sound of a protest makes a difference. It's hard to fire up people with a lukewarm, monotone call to action.
Absolutely. I've been collecting sounds from rallies and protests for over 15 years. It's fascinating to see how the act of giving voice, and not just in speeches, gives the crowd a sense of conviction and purpose. So for our second last piece on today's program, here's a sampling of some of the sounds of protest. It starts with a commentary on the state of protest chants by Eric Jacoby Hawkins, recorded by Edward Mull in Barrie, Ontario, during last weekend's Bill C-51 protests. Other sounds have been gathered by me at various times. A lot of the sounds you'll hear were recorded in the summer of 2000 in Ottawa on Parliament Hill and recomposed in my studio.
Here's something I'm working on. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Simplistic chants have got to go. It's funny, that comes out. Just before I came here, I was thinking, there'll be the regular speeches, and then there's going to be
Harmon control.
And I thought to myself, what would be the chant? It's going to be, hey, hey, ho, ho, C-51, it's about to go. And I thought, no,
predictability is important.
Hey, 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 hey
united in a voice for honor in our relationships with all peoples. We will be united in a voice against racist double standards that continue to oppress us today. I want to thank each of you for being here today, and I encourage you to keep the good fight for truth and justice for all.
Wow, there are a lot of different styles of chants for that piece. That's fascinating. It's great you've been collecting them, and I wonder what the sounds of protest will be like 10 years from now, Victoria.
That's one of the reasons I've been recording them. There's a lot of video out there, but not that many people think to pick up a recorder and document the sounds around us.
That's a good idea. The March 14th Bill C-51 protest of the so-called secret police bill in Toronto was encouraging and provided some good reasons why we've got to stop Stephen Harper in this year's upcoming election.
I hope we've helped you understand more about what some of those reasons are. And to finish up our program today, we're going to play an excerpt from a poem by Nassim Asghari, a 17-year-old student. Of all of the presentations during the Toronto Bill C-51 protests, this is the one speech which provided me a bit of perspective and hope in an otherwise scary bunch of information. Nassim Asghari. Thanks to Nassim Asghari for her grounding, thought-provoking, and hopeful poem. It was recorded at Nathan Phillips Square on March 15th. It was one of many speeches from rallies across the country as Canadians got together to say that we don't want Stephen Harper's vision of Canada, and especially his vision of a police state.
You've been listening to Rabble Radio 163, the Stop Harper edition. Go to rabble.ca as we look ahead to the election. I'm Megan Perry. I'll talk to you next time.
And I'm Victoria Fenner. Tune in again to Rabble Radio on rabble.ca.